From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the very first day of September 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason coming to you from the Farm Progress Show today. We'll have a great show. It's jam-packed, so let's get straight to the numbers. December corn today at 522 and three quarters, finished 11 and a half cents lower. The March at 531 and three quarters, down 11. September beans 21 lower at $12.77 and three quarters. November at $12.77 and three quarters as well. It finished 14 and three quarters lower. In January, $12.87 and a quarter, down 13 and a quarter for the day. The bean meal at $3.43.70, down 2.70. The bean oil for the day at $58.31, a dollar and a nickel lower. And the soft red winter wheat at $7 and a penny, down 5¾ cents on the afternoon. Live cattle futures in Chicago at 127.57½, 67½ cents higher. The feeder cattle at 162.92½, down 7½ cents. And lean hogs at $90.15, down $1.35 for the afternoon. This is the Closing Market Report. Brian Stark now joins us to talk about what's been happening in the marketplace. Thank you, Brian, for being here at the Farm Progress Show and taking the time with me today on this Wednesday afternoon. It's been a beautiful day at the Farm Progress Show, by the way. However, not such a great week in Chicago. Ida really threw a wrench into a lot of the marketplace. What has it meant for basis to begin with on the cash grain situation side?
Well, I think the first implication, when we recognized how much damage it had done to a couple of the major exporters' facilities in the Gulf, the CIF market backed away quite a bit, which is your Gulf market basis for export. And with that, interior markets started to soften. We've since stabilized and come back the last couple of days, but the market as a whole is questioning how much demand we're going to be able to generate now and what the world will be able to count on us exporting. That's the million-dollar question. And I think because of that, you're seeing funds and just orderly selling pressure happen to the market. When yields in a big USDA report, monthly report coming out Friday upon us, we're taking some profit and grinding lower with that expectation until more of the unknown can be quantified with our demand base.
How long do we think that will take? Will we know next week or the week after? Will the market recover, roughly speaking, or continue to grind lower? And what would either look like or tell us?
Well, I think naturally you've got a strong inverse, especially in the eastern processor ethanol arena, that has to merge at some point over the next 3 to 4 weeks. So naturally, basis is going to weaken to new crop levels. The question is how steep or how cheap is it going to remain? And I think that's the question you ask with, is it 1 week, is it 2 weeks, is it 3 weeks? I think over the next couple of weeks, as we start to survey the damage and realize, you know, how we'll be able to pivot some of that export demand will help tell the story. But I also think Friday's report, from an update on the yield perspectives and what that looks like as we get into harvest, will tell a lot about the supply and is that demand base. And right before we got on the air, we talked about, is China going to come back? And that's the general wild card from a demand base. We'll have to wait and see.
So for producers, and you both, do you think that they have sold enough corn up front? We've talked about an awfully large sales, I think, to this point, for delivery in the fall, that it can meet the needs of the marketplace in the near term? And what does that mean for that part of the crop that they have not marketed yet?
Personal opinion, we've talked a lot about that. I think the producer has done a decent job. I still think that he was holding out for another shot at selling $6 corn, which never materialized. And I think maybe he's just a tad undersold overall. But I think, you know, in that 30% to 40% sold of expected production. But I think the key is expectation. In a lot of areas in the East, we know we're staring at record-breaking crops. So I think if the crop becomes larger, you may see some more natural selling pressure where the market tends to grind lower, and the producer should probably take advantage of $5 corn if he cannot store it. If he's got the ability to store it, that buys him some more time, because we still don't expect, unless demand really falls off post-harvest, for the market to get really cheap basis-wise, even with all the space that has to be filled from this large crop.
Anything to discuss from the soybean side?
I think from the bean perspective, that is the bigger challenge, because I think normally we'd start to see China come in as a major buyer of beans as we enter September. I think the large South American crop has kept them pointed that direction. Our natural demand is generally October and forward through February, when they start harvesting their crop in the Southern Hemisphere. The concern on the bean side is, will we see demand be delayed to the U.S.? And I think that potentially could cut demand overall if the South American crop is normal. So, you know, beans, even though we were tight, feels like we're adding some old crop demand being cut, adding some supply back into the carry-in. So similar to corn, I think if you feel like you've got a really big bean crop and can't store it, I think the smart thing to do is to take advantage of the cash market and look at maybe some paper plays to replace it if you want to stay long.
Thank you so much, Brian.
Have a great day, Todd.
You too. Brian Stark is from the Andersons, joined us here on the Closing Market Report from the Farm Progress Show. Jackie Holland joins us. She's the grain market analyst for Farm Futures. And about this time, actually at every Farm Progress Show, if you've been listening to them for a while, you'll hear Farm Futures talk about a study they've released as it relates to the coming year's acreage. You've done that. What did it show?
Yes, we have. We are looking at higher acres for both, for all corn, soybeans, and wheat next year. Our study found farmers to be very optimistic about the current price environment. They're looking at planting 94 million acres of corn, about 91 million acres of soybeans, and 49 million acres of wheat. So we were a little bit surprised to see numbers that high, but again, with profitable prices, there's a lot of uncertainty. And especially kind of looking at some of these more lucrative corn and soybean double crop, wheat and soybean double crop rotations on more marginal ground outside of the Corn Belt, we think there's a lot of opportunities for acreage there.
Where are you finding that primarily? Is that coming, generally will come in Southern Illinois for sure, but other places around the Midwest as well, or maybe in the Delta or somewhere else?
We think that there's probably potential for cotton acres down in the Delta to come into play, but also I think the Plain States are going to be a huge factor in the acreage battle next year. There is a lot of livestock that was slaughtered this year, especially with the drought, so there's a good chance that we could see some of those forage acres come into row crop production.
And are they likely to go to wheat first?
That is our suspicion. Especially with how high wheat prices are and just how tight those stocks are becoming.
What are you telling producers about pricing corn and or soybeans?
So I have some reservations about our number for corn. I think it might be a little bit overly optimistic, kind of based on my back of the napkin math, or redneck economics, if you will. I'm seeing that 91 million acres of corn is likely to be much more feasible for profitable prices for farmers in 2022. So, you know, looking forward to that pricing scenario, I would say, you know, if you see good prices now, it might be worth it to lock in, because if we move into an environment where we're seeing higher supplies, there's definitely going to be some lower price potential for farmers.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Again, Jackie Holland is the grain market analyst at Farm Futures. Marty Marr, Vice President of the Illinois Corn Growers Association, now joins us to talk about the Next Generation Fuels Act and where the future of renewable fuels like ethanol might be headed. This is an act that was put forth by Representative Sherry Bustos, in part from the state of Illinois. And you talked a lot about it on the Farm Progress Show site on Wednesday, where there was a listening session of sorts. Yes. What did farmers think?
Well, you know, first of all, there was several representatives from Indiana, Illinois and Iowa there, which was great to see all these major corn-producing states there represented that way, to really take that message back to D.C. to try to get this Next Generation Fuels Act across the finish line. It was very well attended, a lot of farmers there, advocacy groups of all kinds, the Farm Bureau, the corn, the soybean, everybody that's involved in speaking out for agriculture. And a lot of points got across to them, I think, to take back, and they're on board. There's a lot of more. There's more states starting to get on board to help sponsor this Next Generation Fuels Act, and that's what we're going to need to get to the finish line with this act.
What's the nuts and bolts of this, and how it would impact the driver pulling into a gas station?
Well, first of all, they're going to have a higher octane, which means cleaner burning fuel, more efficient engines, and with that in mind. It's also going to help support the local economies around here at all their local gas stations, auto dealers, if they can provide better, more efficient fuels, and also the farming community. You know, the third of the nation's crop goes into the ethanol and the biofuels effort, and it's just going to be very, very important. And also, another thing that was brought up was the biodiesel industry that's produced right here in Decatur, and there was a representative from ADM that had spoke on that, and it's an important caveat to all of this. You know, it's more cleaner burning fuel for everybody that, again, supports the ag industry, the farmer.
The gasoline supply in the United States has peaked, relatively speaking, in the recent years with higher fuel-efficient efficient cars. The number of bushels of corn that is needed to provide supply for that fuel, even at 10% going forward, appears to be shrinking. Can you maintain or grow the marketplace for corn above 5 billion bushels?
Well, we're hoping so. That 5 billion bushels, that sounds like a lot of corn, but we need to maintain that level. You know, the market is a kind of a adjusted to that, it helps that, you know, the price of corn that we have today. And if we can keep that going, it's just going to be very, very important to the livelihood of all farmers and the industry associated with them. But if we can, with this Next Generation Fuels Act, if we can keep that alive and across that finish line, it just makes sense. An environmental win in every way going. And but we need to get it done so we can maintain these levels. You know, there's a lot of pressure, you know, occasionally from outside administrations that might affect that level. And we need to get that message out that we need this supported. It means a lot to the farming industry and our livelihood.
What's the bottom line as it's related to this Next Generation Fuels Act?
Well, the bottom line to all this is that using higher blends of ethanol will increase the demand for both ethanol and corn, as well as immediate and very effective clean fuel options.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's Marty Marr. He is the Vice President of the Illinois Corn Growers Association. Joined us here at the Farm Progress Show site. Let's check the weather forecast now with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, thank you for being with us today. Let's start right away here in Decatur, Illinois. We have today, which has been beautiful, and tomorrow, which has been beautiful, well, is expected to be gorgeous. First, am I right on that? And then second, does that set the tone for the Midwest for a while?
Certainly, the next 2 days, we are going to see great weather. This day is going to be perfect. Tomorrow, we'll probably have just a little bit more wind blowing across the area, but still a beautiful day, just absolutely fantastic. A lot of sunshine out there. We do have a frontal system that will be sneaking into the region from the west on Friday, and it will bring a chance for showers across the heart of the Midwest at that point in time. The system actually comes in to Illinois, falls apart, and redevelops out to the west as we go into Friday and Saturday. And then I think our better rains east of the Mississippi River will actually occur probably Saturday into Sunday. But these are scattered showers and thunderstorms. They're not likely to have a huge lasting impact. And what's most important is that we are turning the corner here from our active weather pattern in recent weeks, and we will see a lot less precipitation over the next week to 10 days, and I think that's going to be good news for a lot of farms that have had a lot of rain recently, especially in the upper Midwest, northwestern Corn Belt. Those areas have had sufficient amounts of moisture now that drying would probably be better to get those crops to mature normally and to be harvested favorably. So I think we're moving in the right direction. The showers and thunderstorms that will occur here Friday through the weekend, they don't look like they're going to be persistent enough and to cause huge problems. And the amount of moisture that's going to occur is going to be relatively light, with a few exceptions. Some places in Missouri, maybe southwestern Illinois, may get some 1-inch plus totals. But outside of that, the eastern Midwest should see mostly light amounts.
Turn your attention to the southern hemisphere. South America will begin to ramp up maybe by the end of the month, certainly by mid-October. There has been concern bubbling recently because of the lack of rainfall there in the last season, which just ended, frankly. Have you been thinking about what this means going forward?
Oh, absolutely. It's kind of an interesting setup. Last year we did so poorly with rain. We've got huge moisture deficits that are present across Brazil's center south and far southern parts of the country. And if they, for some reason, only get light rains initially and they don't get it to occur routinely, some of these crops will get started with germination and emergence. But every time there's a little break in the rainfall, stress is going to kick in real fast. And so that could be a threat for some of the crop there. But in actuality, I think what will happen this year, we do have a new La Nina event that is going to get started at the end of September and go on through the winter, our winter, and their spring and summer. And what will end up happening here, I think, is that there's going to be a relatively good distribution of rain relative to last year, and the crops will be not as late going in. And what I think we'll see is the center west and center south crop areas of Brazil will do relatively well with November through February rains. They may be a little slow getting started, but I think they'll do fairly well. Now, the area in southern Brazil has a much higher potential this year of seeing more drier biased conditions more often. You know, that's typical of a La Nina year, but last year we seemed to have all kinds of other problems, but southern Brazil never really got excessively dry. And I do think we're going to see that more this year than last year. And so I do think that while center west and center south crop areas do extremely well with rain and have good seasonable temperatures, I think the far south part of the country will end up having some struggles with dryness, and that could bring the total production down a bit. But keep in mind that southern Brazil, far southern Brazil, is not nearly as big of a grain or soybean production area anymore relative to the whole of the country. There's so much more beans are produced farther north that problems in the south might not have as big an impact as what you might think initially.
Hey, thank you, Drew. I appreciate it so much.
You have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio from the Farm Progress Show. Gary Schnicki joins us here on the Farm Progress Show site in Decatur. Yesterday, the Illinois Society of Professional Farm Managers, along with his aide, meaning you did the back end of this, put together and released an update of what their expectations are for both the price of farmland in the state of Illinois and for cash rents. Let's start with the price of farmland. Usually when we have strong cash prices for corn and soybeans, that means farmland prices go up.
Yeah, and what we've seen, or the Illinois Society saw, was a 20% increase in the first half of this year. From January 1 to July 1, we saw farmland prices increase 20%, and we expect a continuing increase through the second half of this year. That is a remarkably large increase. We've seen those prices go up considerably. That has only been exceeded four times since 1970 on a statewide basis. So we're looking at large increases in farmland prices so far and expect those to continue.
What does it mean for cash rent this fall?
Yeah, the Illinois Society surveyed its members, and they expect cash rents to increase by 11%. So Illinois Society for excellent productivity farmland are saying their rents are at $315 for 2021. Expect those to go to $350 for 2022. The average, so that's professionally managed farmland. If we look at for the same productivity sales, the average is probably at $285. I would look for that to go up to $295. So there's going to be increases, likely to be increases in cash rents into 2022.
How might a farmer go about managing that cash rent risk? Because those numbers are really big.
Yeah, those numbers are big, and those numbers combined with non-line cost increases are going to really increase our total outlays next year. So if we have a decline in farmland or commodity prices, we will be looking at shortfalls. You know, going to something like a variable cash rent would be a good thing in this situation. If we continue to see those prices maintain themselves, we can pay those higher cash rents, and if they come back down, it's less of an issue or so. But we have really increased the cost structure of corn and soybeans in the Midwest.
And you can find examples of variable cash rents and the leases on the Farm Doc website, not Farm Doc Daily, but on the Farm Doc site itself?
Yes, you can. There's an example lease. For something like in central Illinois, you would probably be thinking of something like a $200 per acre base rent, which would be paid no matter what. And then if a bonus payment or a higher payment would happen if, you know, 32% of corn revenue and 40% of soybean revenue averaged together were above, resulted in something above that cash rent. That's sort of what we've seen over time, and it's a good model to get us in the ballpark.
Tomorrow, you kick off a series of Farm Doc webinars, which producers should be used to by now. There will be 7 of them, and you're going to take this topic up with Bruce Sherrick.
Yeah, tomorrow we begin our series of fall webinars. They'll happen at 11 a.m. for the next 5-6 weeks, every Thursday. We will record those so you can look at those or look at those if you can't make 11 a.m. But tomorrow it's farmland prices and cash rents, and then we have a whole good series going from there.
I'm looking forward to seeing you tomorrow. You'll be back on campus. I'll be here at the Farm Progress Show, but together we'll be on Zoom, and we'll look forward to having those folks who want to sign up for that to join us live, or they can check it out later on the Farm Doc Daily website as a recording. You can sign up at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Tomorrow we'll take up farmland cash prices and expectations with Bruce Sherrick. Gary Schnitke will be there as well. Again, sign up at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. It kicks off at 11 a.m. and of course they are free. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always find us and listen to us online anytime you'd like, on demand. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org.